Thank you, Judge.
Morning again, Detective.
You're not going to ask me any color questions?
I'm not going to ask it color questions.
Although, I could take a shot.
The suit's gray. Dark gray.
The tie.
It's red, mostly.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You've improved since yesterday.
It's shades. Shades are tough. Some shades.
Detective Cetera, you weren't at Isar's aunt's house when Isar was arrested, right?
Right, I was not.
But you have some general information about him being taken into custody at his aunt's house, correct?
Yeah, I was aware of that.
And then transported to a police station?
Our police station, I believe it was by Officer Montez. And then he was placed in the holding cell.
So, promptly after Mr. Met had been arrested at his aunt's house, he would have been taken to your police station and put in a holding cell, right?
That's right.
And then held there until your questioning and Agent Ross's questioning of him began, right?
That's correct.
Do you know how long that was?
How long he was in the holding cell?
Yes, before you began the questioning.
It started at 3 in the morning, 3:30 in the morning. I believe he was in custody. I'm not exactly sure the time, between 8 and 10 in the evening, probably. So he was in there several hours, 7, 8 hours maybe. Maybe less. I'm not.
And the area where he's being detained, it's actually a cell.
Yeah, there's a set of holding cells, and it's actually on the other side of the building from the actual interview room area.
And at that point, had his clothing been taken for processing, or was he still in his?
He was still in the clothing that he was in. The removal of the clothing didn't happen and back in the holding cell until after the interview. He was placed back in the holding cell.
So, before the questioning of Mr. Met began, your understanding, Detective, was that the FBI had somehow arranged for an interpreter, right?
That's my understanding.
So, let me just focus on you for a minute before I focus on Agent Ross. You're one of the detectives that's going to be conducting the questioning of Mr. Met, right?
Right.
And you knew going into that questioning that you were dealing with a child homicide, right?
Yes.
And you knew generally from your experience and years of training that a child homicide case could end up being a capital murder or death penalty case.
You know, I don't know that that was in my mind. Any homicide case is an important, high-profile, important case.
Okay. In any event, it was a serious matter, correct?
Correct.
So, in your experience and training, you take some precaution to make sure that...
It's okay.
Before you begin interviewing a prime suspect in a child homicide case, that you're able to communicate with that person, right?
Yeah, that's why there was an interpreter there.
So that goes to the heart of my question. What steps did you and or your agency take to make sure you had an adequate interpreter present when questioning a prime suspect in a child homicide?
Well, you know, you have to take it and realize that, number one, I have to trust the people that supervise me. That are coordinating efforts. Unfortunately, there was a breakdown with that. I had used this other interpreter for 3 interviews, and everything seemed very good. You know, in hindsight, obviously I would have inquired about him, but I just had a trust that other people had not steered me wrong with that.
In that regard, Detective, who in your chain of command had taken a look at this issue of having an adequate interpreter for Mr. Met's interview?
That was above me. I don't know where that came from. And like I said, I was aware that the one I had used for the three previous interviews seemed very competent, and I don't remember if I spoke to him before, but I was aware he was I knew he was a court-certified interpreter, and that's my assumption. I made an assumption the other interpreter was a court-certified interpreter. I didn't know how else they would have been there in our office.
Once Mong Mong was gone, the one you had used previously for interviews,
yes,
and you were now left with a new guy, my question to you specifically is, what timeout did you take to make sure with your chain of command you knew who he was, that he would be able to translate fluently, and what connections he may have to Mr. Met or Senator's family? What steps did you take in that
regard? I didn't. Kenny.
So what background information did you have about this brand new interpreter that you didn't know?
Again, my understanding was that the FBI had at least assisted in getting two interpreters. Where that information came from to me, I can't recall. It's a detail that at the time was small, which became in hindsight much bigger than it was.
Did you have any information going into that interview of Mr. Met, detective, that the interpreter you were about to use actually knew Sernamu's family?
No, I had no idea.
And that he had actually spoken to Sernamu's mother and father in the past?
I didn't know that.
And you certainly didn't know anything about his language ability or fluency, obviously.
Correct.
What information did you have, if any, about this brand new interpreter's ethnic background relative to East Armets and whether there might be a clash ethnically?
None.
So as you had a chance to review the transcript that's sitting before you now, on the witness stand, and then compare it to your memory of the interview and the DVD, there are some fundamental breakdowns of communication throughout this interview, right?
Yep. Yes.
And there are times when you and Agent Ross are simply not communicating through the interpreter to East Armet, right?
Yes.
And vice versa, there are times when East Armet is answering and not communicating back to you and Agent Ross, right?
Yes. You can probably see some frustration on my face in that interview, more than likely.
I mean, obviously, detective, you don't speak Burmese or any dialect that the interpreter was using.
That's true.
And so you obviously didn't know what was or wasn't being said to Sarmat by the interpreter.
That's correct. Can I just explain kind of what was more frustrating to me was I had explained to Wynn, I believe, especially on the break, I said, you need to do word-for-word translation for me. Because I talk to him, I tell you what to say, and then it doesn't seem like that's what you're saying. I understand that. I'll do better if I remember at the break. But that was what was the most frustrating. I wasn't sure what he was saying was incorrect. It just seemed like he wasn't doing a word-for-word translation for us like I wanted to do.
Since you had that level of concern by the time of the break, did you consider an alternative, which was stop with this interpreter that didn't appear to be doing an adequate job word for word, and just start again and get Mong Mong back over there?
That would have been great. I tried to get Mong Mong back over there before that actually started, and he's basically refused. Somebody called him on the phone, and he said, I have to go home. I've been up too long or something like that. I have to go home. I can't come back.
Okay, I understand that part. But what I'm asking is, at that time of the break, when you could see that there may be some issues, did you consider just shutting the interview down at that point and restarting again, maybe in 3 hours, and getting Long back?
Certainly, if I can go back, that's what we would have done. Had I considered it, I don't remember what my thoughts were at the time.
Mr. Parrish asked you about a portion of the interview regarding the placement of Sarnamu's body in the shower. I've read that transcript about 5 times, Detective. And what I'm asking you now is very narrow. Isn't it more precise to say that when Isar talked about that, he simply said, I moved the body or repositioned the body away from where it would be obvious, but he didn't specifically say, I left the body in the shower before I ran out of the apartment?
I'd have to double check, but that is... I remember first he said that he'd left the body there basically where it was in view, and then eventually he said he drug it. I thought he just had agreed that he drug it into the shower. He had agreed with either Ross or I. I think it was Ross that he agreed, but I can't say exactly without looking at the transcript.
Okay, so your recollection of that may be a little bit off.
Correct.
There's a section in the interview where, and tell me if this is a fair assessment. The interviewer says back to you and Agent Ross, we've got it, we've got it. Remember that section?
I do.
What's your understanding of what the interpreter was saying to you right there?
I think I asked him what I don't remember exactly, but my understanding was he had just told us that he had killed her, but that was an assumption, and then I don't know what happened to get us back off that. I wanted to clarify that, obviously, but something happened in the interview where it kind of went off track away from that.
And prior to that, there's a portion of the interview, and I'm not saying these words ever came from you or Detective Ross, but the interpreter is saying to Mr. Met, you need to tell the truth. If you lie to them, you will get hit harder. Remember that section of the interview?
Yeah, I recall that.
Obviously, you didn't know that was being conveyed to you somehow.
Right.
That would have been something important for you to know.
Yes.
If you had known about these kinds of language difficulties this interpreter had, if you had known about the interpreter's connection to Sarnamu's mom and dad, would you have ever used this interpreter in this interview?
Well, obviously, if I would have known he wasn't a court-certified interpreter in general, and of course, with contact with family, of course, we wouldn't have used him.
Detective, when you or the FBI were using Mong Mong for interpreting and or this additional interpreter we were referencing today, were they compensated by some agency for their time?
I don't know.
They could have been.
I have no idea.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Direct.